Everyone. Oh, here comes JKT. This meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries will come to order. The time is 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 26th. Members present are Representative Vance, Representative Tarr, Representative Pruitt, Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Chair Stutes. Welcome. Nice to see you. This is our first meeting of the year, and I'm happy to be here and happy to see you all. Please silence your cell phones. We're asking that the audience not approach the table, the committee table. If you need to pass a note or get the attention of someone up here, please get the attention of my committee aide, Matt Greening, and he'd be happy to help you. I'd like to thank Eric Heimberger. Heimbigner from the Juno LIO. And for teleconferencing support, and I'd also like to thank our recording secretary, Lori Rowland, and she is also training Robert Montenegro. How would you say it?
Montenegro.
That's two for two. Not good this morning. today we'll be hearing a presentation by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute on As Me Itself. A market update, as well as an analysis of the harvest value, volume, and competition in relation to Alaska seafood and the Alaska seafood industry. Members, please feel free to ask questions as we go. And here to present, we have Jeremy Woodrow, Interim Executive Director for ASME. And Mr. Woodrow, if you'd please join us at the table, state your name and affiliation for the record, and proceed with your presentation.
Chairwoman Stutes, representatives of the House Fisheries Committee, my name is Jeremy Woodrow. I'm the Interim Executive Director for the Alaska Seafood Market Institute, and thank you for having me here today. I'm going to go through slide by slide, and as the chairwoman said, please feel free to ask questions throughout. I'll make sure to pause at the end of each slide, and you can, you know, help me to back up or ask questions throughout. So we'll be talking a bit today about ASME and provide you an agency overview of what we've been up to the last year or so, and our programs as well. I'll also go into an economic impact of the Alaska seafood industry, go over some challenges, some opportunities we have as an industry, and then also talk about the harvest value, volume, and what the current state of the Alaska seafood fishery as an industry is.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you. I just wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself as the new interim executive director. I got to talk to you at the dinner a few weeks ago, but for folks that are unfamiliar.
Be happy to, through the chair. Thank you. Yes, my name is Jeremy Woodrow. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, born and raised here in Juneau. I come from a commercial fishing family. My father was a commercial fisherman here in Southeast for 45, 50 years. Finally retired. He said he was going to retire for about 15 years until he actually did, like most commercial fishermen do. My brother also, he picked up the reins. He's also a commercial fisherman. He fishes three different fisheries here in Southeast as well. I don't quite have the sea legs as them, and so I went the other route, but still have a, you know, strong affinity for the fisheries. I've been with ASME for a couple years now. I'm also the communications director as well as the interim executive director right now. And
if you would excuse me for just one moment while I welcome Representative Edgemond. Thank you.
And is that enough?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I just and you did that. You were working at ASME prior to this, and so I thought that was important for folks to know too.
Yeah, through the chair, yes, I've been working at ASME for a bit, and if you recognize my name, I also used to work for DOT as a communications officer there, and my name might have been in the papers a few times there. So, moving on to slide three. So, what is Alaska Seafood Market Institute? We are the Alaska's official seafood marketing arm. We are a public-private partnership between the state of Alaska and the seafood industry. We are funded in part by the seafood industry, and that funding is through a self-assessment. It's a voluntary assessment set by the industry. It's a half of 1% of X vessel value. You might ask yourself, what is X vessel value? Well, X vessel value is that first sale between a fisherman and the seafood processor. So the way we explain it to fishermen across the state is if you catch $100,000 worth of fish on your boat in 1 year and you sell that then to a processor, $500 of that then goes to ASME to market your fish on your behalf. I like to bill ASME as the ultimate success story of when you pool your resources together, what you can get out of the greater good. Tell any fisherman to try to market their seafood themselves for $500 and they won't get very far. But pooled together, it comes to be about $8 to $9.5 million a year we get from the industry to market on their behalf. We do this by developing and creating new markets around the world. We build and protect the Alaska seafood brand. And then we also work directly with the industry very closely through our board, as well as through committee members who are all seafood and industry members. On the slide four, go over our budget.
I have a question.
Yes.
You said that you received some, how much do you receive from the state?
To the chair. Right now we receive zero UGF from the states. And actually I can cover that on the next slide if you'd like.
Okay, can you, as long as I'm on that line of questioning, do you have any idea what the travel industry gets from the state?
I do. To be honest with you, I don't know what they're getting in FY19. I do know what the proposal was for FY20, if you'd like me to answer
Please.
That. So in the FY20 capital budget, ATIA is set to receive $7.5 million in the amended budget from Governor Dunleavy.
And that's zero for ASME?
Correct.
Thank you.
Shall I continue?
Continue, okay. Please.
All right, on slide four, I'll go over a bit of history of our budgets and what our proposed or projected budget is for FY20. You'll notice in the top line that we do operate from carry forward. This is leftover industry funds that have been in the ASME accounts. This is important for us to have carry forward. We draw down on this currently because we, as the chair and I just discussed, we do not receive any general fund anymore. Our marketing budget currently does exceed our revenues. We receive federal funds as well as industry funds, but we are operating from some of our carry forward. You'll notice in the very bottom of the ending carry forward, projected around to have around 11 to 12 million in the FY when we start FY20. It's important that we do have carry forward because when our industry funds come to ASME, they actually come to us later in the fiscal year. So we actually need to have money when we start the fiscal year so we can actually cut checks on July 1 to our operators around the world. Our budget authorization usually exceeds our marketing spend plan. That is a good thing. That allows us to have the ability to be flexible throughout the year. We always want to have a little bit more room in our authorization in case a crisis comes up. A good example would be when Fukushima hits. There was a lot of scare across the world that now every single fish that was caught in the Pacific was going to be tainted with radiation. We want to be able to be flexible to be able to respond to those type of crises should they come up. Moving on to slide five. This is an update on legislative intent from 2016. ASME was asked to draw down on our spending as we became less reliant on general funds. Part of this was trying to create and find new funds. Happy to announce to this group that ASME was just recently awarded additional federal funding. This is through the Agricultural Trade Promotion Program. And this was an additional $200 million that was set aside for U.S. agricultural products. Seafood falls into that. This is in response to the ongoing trade wars with China and other nations where we don't have fair trade. ASME applied for this. It's a competitive bid, and we were happy to say that we got $5.5 million of additional federal funds to use for our marketing activities. This is to be spent over 3 years. It's not $5.5 million just for this year. We expect to spend about $2 million in FY20, $2 million in FY21, and about $1.5 million in FY22. I will put on here for transparency, the industry does have the option to increase their tax to that their self-voluntary tax to ASME. Right now they're at a 0.5%. They could go up to 0.6%. That's according to statute. They can't go any higher right now in statutes. There hasn't been any discussion, however, if they want to go up to that amount. We just put that on there so you know they have that ability. Another intent from the legislature was to relocate ASME's positions from Seattle to Alaska. That happened in 2018. We closed our Seattle office in June of 2018. All those positions were relocated. We rehired a lot of new staff, so we do have a lot of younger staff on ASME right now that are cutting their teeth in industry and learning as they go. We did lose some industry knowledge, but I will say that we are moving forward, and it's been a couple years now that we've hired these new staff, and we're on a good pace. And as we pointed out in the previous slide, we've reduced our spend plan quite a bit in the last few years to provide basically a more sustainable budget to meet our revenues. Moving on to the next slide. Just to compare the current fiscal year to the amended budget that was sent out a couple weeks ago. Obviously, we don't receive any general funds. We don't need in FY19. We don't expect to receive any in FY20. We are using industry funds as well as our federal funds to fully support our program. The one line item that probably will stick out the most if you were to look at the OMB report is our travel budget's been reduced from $368,000 to $158,000. It's really hard to market seafood outside of Alaska if you don't travel outside of Alaska. We've been working with the department to make sure that that number is correctly reflected for how much travel ASME actually needs to produce to actually meet our mission. We have been trying to find ways to be more efficient with our travel, however, and that's reflected in that last bullet that shows that we have reduced our travel costs by about 20% since FY12. That's about $100,000 in savings. Moving on to slide 7. So what does ASME actually do for the state of Alaska? Here's just a quite few bullets about some returns on our marketing efforts. For example, in China, we sold over $1 million worth of product for only $10,000 spent. One way that we make our dollar stretch is we work with other U.S. partners to promote U.S. products overseas. When I talked about those federal funds, those are agricultural funds. Other big brands such as like Starkist or California Almonds, they apply and they receive those federal funds as well. We partner with those brands overseas to promote Alaska seafood as well as U.S.-made products, and that's one way we can stretch the dollar. Another great return, an example is in Japan, in a week-long promotion, produced over $223 million of sales and just $35,000 spent from ASME. Another way we are also very successful in using our dollars is being very strategic of where we place our dollars when it comes to timing and promotions. And so whether it be online or around times when seafood eaters in these countries are going to eat more and purchase more Alaska seafood. We're very happy to say that we still hold the number one ranking for a recognized protein brand on menus in the U.S. Basically what this means is if you're a customer and you go to a restaurant in the U.S. and you see the Alaska Seafood logo, you're more likely to recognize that logo over any other protein brand. And I'm very specific to say protein brand. It's not any other brand. If you're curious about what the number one brand ranked on menus, that's actually Oreo's cookies. So go figure.
Representative Chris Tompkins has a question.
Thank you, Chair Suits. As curious, I've heard the statistic off and on through the years about Alaska Seafood's sort of ranking in the protein marketplace. Per who? Who does this metric or evaluation? And what's the Nielsen of protein rankings?
Through the chair, Chris Tompkins, I'll have to come back to you on the exact research agency. It's a third-party research agency. It's not ASME doing our own research. It's research that we do pay for, and it's every other year that we conduct that research. We go through many different national firms, and so whether it's Technomics or Mintel or Nielsen, I can't recall which one it would be, so I'd have to follow up with you on the specific firm. And I can provide more detail and information, too.
If you provide that to the chair, then we can provide it to the whole committee.
Ask a question too.
Certainly, Representative Edgman.
Thank you. So China, what does the future hold for market opportunities in China? And I'm thinking back to the governor's trade delegation mission in May of last year and the impact that that might have had in terms of continuing to open doors, because I know you've done some works. You've done work vis-a-vis markets in China, but can you talk about that for a second?
To the chair, Representative Edgman, I certainly can. It's actually my very last slide because thought it was going to be a very entertaining topic to cover.
I'll hold off then. Thank you.
Okay. And then the very last bullet on this slide is just to recent research that ASME did through Technomics was to conduct who the seafood eaters are of the future and who the current seafood eaters are here in the U.S. And through our research, we discovered that 71% of seafood eaters actually are willing to pay more when they see the Alaska Seafood logo used on whether it's packaging or menus. And that holds to the value of the brand. So on to slide 8, let's talk about some challenges and some opportunities really quick about the Alaska seafood. As Representative Edgman alluded to, China obviously is an ongoing challenge when it comes to the trade disputes that we have. The Russian embargo still exists, meaning that they send their products to the U.S., but we cannot send our products to Russia, and that creates a trade imbalance. Just to throw out a quick stat to you, when the Russian embargo was enacted, it was about 4 years ago or so, that displaced about $60 million in value of just pink salmon roe alone. So that was $60 million that we had to find new markets to send our pink salmon roe to. Reduced harvest of some of our high-value species. We've seen some value go down, or some harvest volume go down in halibut, as well as some king crab species, and that reduces our overall value to our fund, basically, of our seafood species. High prices of some key species also limit the entry barrier for some seafood eaters, but in contrast to that, we do have a whole range of value of species, from pollock being on the lower end to king crab or black cod on the higher end. But some opportunities to just cover. We do have a great story to tell. Our origin story of here in Alaska is bar none. There isn't an origin story like we have, and so we make sure to capitalize that and talk about the Alaska story every opportunity we have. We are the front runner and really the gold standard when it comes to sustainability management of our fisheries, and that resonates with consumers worldwide as well. Moving on to slide 9. So I'm going to cover a few of our programs and just highlight these programs really quickly. Our international program, they operate in 8 different markets in 31 different countries. Some programs that they are operating currently that have been very successful are e-commerce platforms, especially in areas like China or Japan. We had a recent staff member who was at a trade expo in China this last year, and they were talking about e-commerce so much that when they actually refer to customers shopping anywhere other than e-commerce, they just call it offline shopping. So think about that, how the last time that you purchased your groceries online. It doesn't happen here in Alaska as much as it might elsewhere around the world. We also do trade missions in our national program. We bring buyers as well as chefs and media members internationally to Alaska. It's one thing to tell the story to them when they're in their country, but once you bring them to Alaska, they really get the scope, the size, and how amazing of a state that we actually live in. Last year, we did our first Women's of Seafood Buyers mission. Women have been a demographic that's been traditionally a lower demographic in the seafood industry, but it is growing as we see it growing in other industries. And so it was important to highlight this movement and make sure that they had a voice and an opportunity to be introduced to the fishery here in Alaska and produce sales from that.
Representative Vance, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about on that trade mission. You mentioned Ukraine specifically. Why Ukraine?
Through the chair, Representative Vance. So this mission specifically went to Dutch Harbor, where we highlighted the cod and pollock industry. There is a lot of cod and pollock that goes to Eastern Europe, and that's also Ukraine is an area that we're trying to grow. We're seeing a lot of more seafood going to Ukraine as a country, and so it's part of our Eastern Europe platform that we're trying to grow. Some of that is in response to the Russia embargo, not being able to sell our seafood directly to Russia, going through Ukraine ends up being a more favorable opportunity for the seafood industry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Last bullet on this slide is to cover Seafood Expo Global. This is the largest seafood conference in the world. This is really puts, if anyone wants to know about how Alaska seafood has a place in the global market, you'll make us feel really small when you see the size of our pavilion compared to the other countries. We are a large player in the seafood industry, but there's that much seafood in the world. This is a very important show, though, for our seafood members. We host a pavilion. We provide a space for them to meet with prospective buyers from around the world. And just as you see here, on-site sales were 52 million just last year, and projected sales from the meetings they had during this conference were 640 million or more.
Are we the only area that markets our food with Alaska? I mean, I never see anything when you see, go to the market and you see Russian king crab. I never see anything that says Russian king crab. You just got to look at it and know it's not ours. Are we the only area that markets it?
To the chair, I would say not anymore. Other locations have realized how impactful it is to place an origin on your food. Norway has actually doing a very big push in a larger campaign. You'll start to see more of their campaign here in the U.S. It was announced in some of the trade news recently that they're putting more money into the U.S. market to market Norway as a location for their food. Iceland's also doing the same thing.
Along those lines, when they're doing that, would they put whether or not it's wild-caught or farm-grown? Do you know?
To the chair, I would say yet to be seen. So the marketing hasn't quite hit our shelves yet, and we'll see when it comes across.
Interesting. Thank you. Yep. Representative Pruitt.
So, you know, I got to admit, I've been at some places in the East Coast, and I'll ask them where salmon comes from. And I'll get, with pride, people will say, well, it's Atlantic farmed salmon. And the farm, they specifically want to highlight the farmed. So, I mean, obviously, we're out there with wild. In some cases, I think we've, and maybe more that's the East Coast as opposed to the West Coast. I know on the West Coast, there's high value in the wild caught. But it seems like there's a marketing success in some cases of saying, well, farmed, it's controlled, it's not wild, we're not out there destroying the wild population. And it seems like we are up against that. Was it just an incorrect perception, or was that a correct perception in some certain cases?
Yeah, to the chair, Representative Pruitt, you're exactly right. Especially when it comes to salmon, farm dominates the markets. Wild salmon represent only about 15% of the marketplace. So 85% of the salmon that you can find in stores across the world is going to be from a farmed product. You know, we know that when people who are seafood buyers, they grow an affinity for Alaska seafood. But just when you think of the sheer numbers alone, we can't be everywhere. So we must therefore be more strategic of where our salmon is sold and where we are located. It can be nearly worldwide, but on numbers alone, there's only so far that we actually can go with our product.
No, I understand. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Out of that 15%, how much does Alaska dominate?
To the chair, or through the chair, Representative Vance, it varies year to year. Here in the U.S., we represent about 98% of the wild-caught salmon in the U.S. The other 2% would be Washington, Oregon, and a little bit from California. On the global markets, the majority of our wild competition would come from Russia, and that varies wildly year to year. They do a lot of salmon hatcheries as well, but on a completely different scale and scope than we do. Most of their harvest is in pink and chum salmon. I don't have the current numbers on it, but I can share just a quick stat with you. Is this last year, Russia caught so many pink salmon. It was over a billion metric pounds of pink salmon. And to put that in perspective, they caught more pink salmon in the summer of 2018 than Alaska has ever harvested in a single year in all of our species combined. So that's a big player. So if you put that in, that's almost 50% of the wild market. So,
all right, thank you.
Yep. Moving on, slide 10, highlight our public relations program here in the United States. This is the way that we directly reach consumers here in the U.S. We work with different media, food writers, as well as online and digital media. One thing that we do every year is we hold events in New York, either one or two events in New York where we invite media. That's where most of the big media outlets are located here in the United States. It would be too timely and too costly to bring them all to the Alaska every year. So we go to them. We host events where we highlight all the species of Alaska seafood, make sure they taste it, and then talk to them, have one-on-one conversations. These events are very important for Alaska seafood. Anywhere from about 25 to 30% of all of our earned coverage comes from these type of events. We also hold a culinary retreat every year where we bring select media members to Alaska and build a deeper relationship with them. These relationships really last for a long time. We have writers who we brought to Alaska over a decade ago who are still writing about Alaska seafood, and whether it's, you know, Parade or Oprah or other large magazines or outlets. And that's nothing more than we brought them to Alaska. We aren't pitching them again, but they're still talking about Alaska because we brought them to the state and they've grew that affinity for Alaska seafood in Alaska. Just to cover some stats, in 2018 alone, we had 340 stories that were earned from our public relations efforts, and that resulted in just under a billion impressions. Moving on to the next slide. We work with a lot of different restaurants, retailers, as well as food service operators across the United States as part of our domestic program. You can see some big names there. I think we all recognize Costco and Amazon and probably Macy's. Quick service restaurants, fast food restaurants like Jack in the Box and Del Taco and Sonic, they do a lot of promotions around the Lenten season, especially with fish sandwiches like pollock sandwiches or cod sandwiches you'll see coming up right now. And I'll talk a little bit more about one of our efforts with Amazon Prime on the next slide, slide 12. And this is a new growing development in the marketing sphere for food service companies or food companies like Alaska Seafood. We worked with Amazon Prime as well as Serious Eats and Simply Recipes to develop recipes specifically around Alaska seafood. The one thing we hear from seafood eaters or just customers in general all the time is, I don't know how to cook fish. Teach me how to cook fish and make it easy to cook it. So here, through creating shoppable recipes, when people find these recipes on Simply Recipes, they can just click the recipe and it automatically goes into their Amazon Prime account. It puts all the ingredients that they need to prepare this recipe in their Amazon Prime box. So then when they check out through Amazon Prime, these groceries are delivered to their house. It has the recipe, how to prepare the seafood included in the sale, and should be as easy as you can make it. It's very similar to other meal delivery services that we see, like through like such as like Blue Apron. We're excited to see where this new trend can go, and hopefully that will actually move the needle a little bit more for Alaska seafood. Moving on to slide 13, this bringing it back to Alaska, another thing that ASME does for the seafood industry is we work directly with industry to identify ways that we can improve quality throughout the entire supply chain, and that's from the fishermen all the way through the handling and the shipping and the freezing process. Here's a couple examples, such as developing quality handling materials. I put a few of the stickers, such as the knot by the tail. These are geared toward fishermen to make sure that when they catch their fish, they're handling it correctly, because the one thing a processor can't do is correct damaged fish once it's been reached to them. So it needs to start with the fishermen and move all the way through the chain to make sure that we have the highest quality seafood reaching customers across the world. We also develop buyer guides. This helps the seafood processors and sellers talk about Alaska seafood more in depth for the industry. And lastly, you'll see the infographic on the far right here. We have a full utilization of Alaska seafood products. This is really important. I'll talk a bit later in another slide about the value of the industry as a whole. But the only way that we're really going to increase the overall value from a finite resource, we have a sustainable resource, there's only so much that we can harvest in our ocean, is to use more of our resource in more creative ways. And so this utilization of Alaska seafood, not just using prime cuts, not just selling fillets, but making sure we're getting value out of the heads, the tails, the fins, the collars, more value out of the roe, is the only way we're going to increase the overall value of Alaska seafood. So this is one way to identify other opportunities for increasing that piece of that pie. And then lastly, was a highlight for programs that ASME does is our RFM program, our Responsible Fisheries Management Program. This is actually a sustainable certification program. There's only really a couple options to certify wild fisheries as sustainable in the global marketplace. And the biggest one is the Marine Stewardship Council. That's the blue fish that's second from the left. The Alaska seafood industry, though, believes that it's important to have an option and a choice to certify your fisheries as sustainable. And so the RFM program is currently operated by ASME, but it's third-party benchmarked to the GSSI. That's the Global Sustainable Seafood Initiative. That's the same benchmarking organization that benchmarks all of those other certified green labels that you see below. It's important to have that third-party certification. That's what customers need. That's what customers and buyers demand worldwide. All right, so moving on. So let's talk about the value of Alaska seafood. Why is everything that ASME does so important to the state of Alaska? So moving on to slide 16. The economic value of Alaska seafood. Well, Alaska seafood is a cornerstone to Alaska's economy. It directly employs more workers than any other industry in the state of Alaska, any other private industry in the state of Alaska. And that's about 60,000 workers annually. Alaska seafood contributes about $146 million in taxes annually across the state government and federal governments. And just to throw out another quick stat for you, if you were to increase the ex vessel value of each species by 1 cent, so let's say if a fisherman sells their halibut for, say, $7, and that would go up to $7.01, and that was the same across the board, that 1 cent increase in a per pound across all the species would generate $1.8 million in additional revenue through to local governments and the general fund. Alaska seafood also contributes annually about $5 billion to the economic growth of Alaska. And we're also statewide, about 176 shore plants, 8,600 vessels ply our waters. And we were talking about Alaska's place in the global marketplace. If we were actually our own country, we'd rank number 8 globally. So we are a big player in the global marketplace, but there's that much seafood. Number 8 is still one of many. Moving on to the next slide. Top ports, it's always good to cover where most of our fish has landed. Dutch Harbor has been the number one port in the country as far as volume landed and value landed for years. I think it's over several decades running. Naknek surpassed Kodiak. That's basically due to the high value of sockeye salmon lately. Kodiak is, when it comes to volume, is number two as far as volume goes in the state of Alaska. And then we round out the top five with Cordova and Sitka. So you'll see that actually it's pretty widespread across the state, especially the Gulf of Alaska's value for our species landed. But, you know, regional employments, it is really statewide. There are permit holders and commercial fishermen from as far north as Ukiavik all the way down to Saxman and Ketchikan as far east as or west as Dutch Harbor. So it is a statewide industry. Now on slide 18, let's go over the harvest volume versus value. This is probably one of my favorite charts to share with any group or any stakeholder group. You'll see on the left side here we have our harvest volume. It's about 5.9 billion pounds. The majority of that volume is Alaska pollock. We have salmon, about 14%. Cod is about 12%. And you'll notice that crab and is about 1%. Same with halibut and sablefish, about 1%. But if you look over in the other chart, though, we look at the value, and it's much more widespread. We have a greater dispersion of the of the costs. 34% of the value is actually salmon and 22% is pollock. If you're a portfolio manager and you're looking at your investments, you would say this is a really good portfolio. This is exactly what you want your portfolio to look like. Why is this good, though, for the state of Alaska to have a good range and value for products like this? Well, all our species are wild and they are volatile from year to year. And so we're not always going to get the same return and we're not going to get the same value from each species year to year. But because we do have a very balanced portfolio, that means, say, if salmon has one down year or we have a down year from halibut, that'll be made up by the other species. Very rarely do we ever have a down year for all of our species in terms of volume and value. And so the return to the state of Alaska is consistent. And that has been about $1.9 billion recently. And actually, to cover that on slide 19, you'll see where our harvest volume has been pretty consistent between about 5 and 6 billion pounds for the last 15, 16 years, where our ex-vessel value is actually trending the right direction overall the last same time frame. It's going up. It's gone from a little over $1 billion to almost $2 billion now. And so that's the trend we want to see. And here at Alaska Seafood, when we talk about the value of our resource, that's what we want. That's how we know that, you know, the industry is healthy and it's going the right direction. Moving on to slide 20, this is the product types that our industry produces. About 39% of the seafood that's harvested here in Alaska when it's exported from Alaska is H&G or whole fish. So that's usually going elsewhere to be reprocessed because it's not a finished product. 21% are fillet forms, and that's probably a growing trend. It'll be interesting to see. These are 2015-16 averages. When we do this report again in this fall, it'll be interesting to see if that fillet market, that percentage goes up, as we have seen that more and more, especially in the salmon markets, are producing more fillets direct to retail markets. The canned percentage will probably go down. The canned has been a tougher market. Less consumers are gearing toward cans. It tends to be an older generation that has more affinity for canned salmon, especially in some of our foreign markets, and producers just aren't producing as much canned salmon. They're responding to the marketplace. A lot of product, especially in pollock, is surimi, and then it's rounded out by, you know, meal oil and others.
Let me ask you, is ASME participating in pursuing any kind of value-added products that are generated within the state of Alaska?
To the chair, we work with like the Kodiak Marine Science Center to research how we can increase more value added for the seafood industry. You know, we work with the industry as well of, you know, to try to understand what the hurdles are for creating value added in the state of Alaska. And I don't think it's any surprise to any of the committee members here that, you know, cost of energy is one of the biggest drivers for producing, you know, more product here in the state of Alaska. Employment is also a challenge for the seafood industry as well. you know, the jobs are good paying. I think they're paying, you know, some of the seafood processors are over $12 an hour for their seasonal work, and they have a tough time recruiting locals, and they have a tough time recruiting people from out of state to work in those jobs as well. So those are challenges. You talk to any seafood member, and they would love to do more in the state of Alaska, but those are some hurdles that they can't get through to do more of that work in state.
And then I'm going to kind of regress a little bit back to when you were talking about all the presentations you have around the world, you know, in the different countries and what you do. What are you doing within the state of Alaska to promote Alaskan seafood? Is there a push within the state to educate Alaskans?
To the chair, that's a great question. I would say right now we don't have a strong in-state piece of our marketing arm to promote Alaska seafood to Alaskans. You know, to be honest, the Alaskans is a fairly small market share. Alaskans also don't buy a lot of seafood as much as we wish they would. A lot of Alaskans catch their own. Though there are other parts of the industry. A great example is the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. They have the Catch 49, where they're trying to create direct sales from commercial fishermen here in the state of Alaska to Alaskans. And we work with them to promote Alaska seafood products in the state of Alaska. But as far as doing direct promotions here in the states, that's something that we currently are not doing. So,
and Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you. A little bit of a digression from this slide as well, but per your mention about Russia producing 1 billion pounds of pink salmon, for other countries that produce wild salmon, do you have a sense of how that sort of manifests in product form, canned versus fillets versus value-added product, and sort of how Alaska compares in terms of adding value to its wild salmon product?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, that's a really good question. We don't have numbers on that. I could definitely ask our research firm that we contract with, which is McDowell Group, to see if there are some numbers on value added from other countries. The other countries other than Russia would be Canada and Japan. The Japan market is mainly for their Hokkaido chum, which has actually been depressed the last several years, and that was mainly for our roe. Markets. And then the Canadian fisheries are pretty much every 4 years as a sockeye fishery. So I can't imagine that they would produce too many value-added products, but we can definitely look into and see if there are value-added from other countries. If we were to go, can add on to your question here, value-added product form, especially if we're talking about salmon, you have to say smoked salmon would be considered a value-added product, and that dominates the marketplace with a lot of farm product as well.
Thank you. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back on slide 18, if we could for a moment. Or pardon me, slide 19. I was just noticing, so it looks like in the 2009 time frame, there's both a total harvest volume decline as well as an excess value decline. And in other circumstances, they don't seem so closely linked. Could you just talk about the sort of the relationship, what was happening in that year versus some of these other times where they're not so closely matched?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Tarr, I should have been more prepared. I saw that as well when I was looking at this slide, and I needed the notes in front of me to really be able to speak to that eloquently, but I will get back to you on that and through the chair on those questions.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Kopp.
Yes, Jeremy, excellent presentation. I really appreciate it. Of course, one possible explanation, Representative Tarr, is as the volume goes up, that can drive the price down. Jeremy, question about the Russian market. Is the huge catch of pink salmon related to fish hatcheries at all in Russia?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Kopp, that's correct. They do have a large hatchery program as well. And there's probably some environmental factors that go on as well. And something that I should point out when it comes to pink salmon, just some general pink salmon education is pink salmon live exactly 2 years. They do not stray from that two-year cycle. So our even year and odd year fish are distinct. While they're the same species, they're distinct in that species. Here in Alaska, we have very high odd year returns and very low even year returns. That's the exact opposite in Russia. They have very high even years and very low odd years. So so part of that is that they had a very high even year and along with a complement of their hatcheries.
Right.
Follow up.
Other than the fish meal plant in Naknek, is there any other plants that are dealing with byproducts of fish that you know of?
In Naknek or outside of Naknek? Sorry.
Yeah, outside of Naknek. I think Naknek got one going about 3 years ago that they're trying to get to be a year-round operation.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Kopp, that's a good question. Yes, there are plants across the state. Nearly almost every plant is looking at how they can expand their byproducts, whether it's through oil, fish meal. You know, a great example is, actually surimi itself could almost be considered a byproduct. In Representative Stute's hometown in Kodiak, Trident does a great job of filleting their pollock products and then turning the rest of the product into surimi.
And we also have a huge fish meal plant that is harvesting fish oil as well in right. Kodiak.
That's great.
That's part of the smell of money you smell right, when you drive into town.
You know when it's running, I'll tell you what.
Well, so in full disclosure, I've been involved with the smell of salmon money for about 50 years of my life. And thank you for the work that ASME does. I think the work that has most impacted the fishery is in handling the fish. As you were talking, I was thinking how in the early 60s and 70s, you know, we were on 12-hour delivery schedules, and we were peeling our fish running them through with the hook, and now we're on 2-hour delivery schedules with all fish have to be bled immediately on ice, and no picks allowed. We have quarter-inch foam to land the fish on, so when they shake out of the, they don't bruise. And a lot of that's been the work of you folks in helping market salmon around the world, and it's really raised the game in the industry. And you catch less fish when you handle with that, but that's okay. It's better for the industry overall, and I think it's really improved the Alaska Seafood logo, given it the standard it is today, which means a lot for our state. So I just want to thank you for your work.
Great, yeah. Through the chair, thank you, Representative Kopp. That's great to hear. And I have to give credit where credit's due as well, as one of our partners we work with is the Bristol Bay Economic Development or Regional Development Association. They do a lot of work on trying to increase the quality handling in Bristol Bay specifically, and that really we've seen some great progress with that, from just freezing and or at least icing the fish to RSW systems being installed in a lot of the fleets, and that has improved the quality of the sockeye that come out of the bay incredibly. So thank you. Let's move on to slide 21. I'm just making sure I'm keeping the representative on time here. So what are some things that impact our value? Yes, as we pointed out, large harvests do bring down prices often. It's the typical supply and demand scenario. Inventory, it's something that the seafood industry is running up into right now is with some of the trade disputes, they have extra inventory. And so when they have inventory carry over from a current year, that depresses the value going into the next year. If they can't sell all their product from 1 year to the next, that hurts the value going into the next year because they just aren't going to have the same purchasing power. And then obviously competition with other species. I'll get that to another slide. And then demand, consumer preferences. If we can increase demand, we'll always be able to bring up the value, and that's something that ASME is, does first and foremost is trying to increase consumer demand. Another thing that really impacts the value for Alaska seafood, and we'll go on to slide 22 here, is the currency rates of the U.S. dollar. This affects basically purchasing power from foreign countries. If the U.S. dollar is worth more against another foreign currency, that's less that they can purchase from us. So usually when the U.S. currency is down, the value of our products go up. That's the simplest way to put it. Though we have seen a little bit of a tick in currency value up in the 2016 time, you'll notice that we still held that trend. That's great to see that we were able to hold the trend line going up in value overall when the currency rates were still relatively high. Moving on to slide 23, that's just talk about direct competition one-to-one with all of our species that we harvest here in Alaska. I won't go through these every single one, but I think some obvious ones are such as pollock. That's a large volume species. A lot of pollock is also harvested in Russia. That gets sent here to the U.S., and they kind of get mixed together in the world markets. We believe that our pollock that we harvest here in Alaska is of higher quality. It's single frozen most time, whereas Russian pollock is usually twice frozen. That produces a lower quality product. Black cod, you know, we all know how great black cod is, and if you don't, then I encourage you to buy some and find out. But it competes with sea bass, which is also another very fatty and oily fish in the marketplace. And so the point of this slide is to show that while we know that we all have great products that come out of our waters, there is an equal or competing product worldwide, and consumers don't necessarily know that difference. And that's one reason, you know, why ASME exists, is to make sure that consumers understand the difference and look for Alaska when they either go to a grocery store or a food service. So where does our seafood go on the slide 24? Well, about 60% of our seafood harvested here in Alaska is sent overseas, and that represents about 60% of the value as well. The blue dots represent where ASME has active marketing programs. The red dots are elsewhere. Our funds are limited, so we can't be everywhere for Alaska Seafoods marketing programs. So we must be strategic. And as you can see, the blue dots are the larger of the dots, and so that's why we have programs there. To stay on the China theme, you'll notice that China is obviously not even a dot. It's just a giant circle on this map. It is a very important market to Alaska seafood. Most of our seafood that is sent there is reprocessed and then exported to countries worldwide. Some of that does come back to the U.S., but actually a majority of that does go to other countries, such as going back to Japan, Korea, or to European markets. Just like to highlight one little blue dot down there in South America, and that's the Brazil dot. That's a new market for Alaska seafood. That's the market that ASME put our eyes on several years ago of a growing market. Just a little tidbit for you, Brazil has the highest population of Japanese expats than any other country in the world, and so they're obviously our seafood eaters, and that's one reason why we targeted Brazil, other than Brazilians being high seafood eaters as well. And that dot just keeps growing year to year. With our additional federal funds, those additional $5.5 million of funds, we're looking at growing that program in Brazil to see if we can make that dot get a little larger. So on the slide 25, here's the China tariffs talk that Representative Edgman had alluded to earlier. So there's really two different tariffs in play here. The first tariff is a 25% tariff on all Alaska seafood products going to China. This was implemented on July 6th in 2018. The significance of this is for all seafood products that are entering the Chinese domestic market. This does not apply to products going to China that are being reprocessed. So it's just markets going to China. But that's a big deal. We don't have great numbers. It's China after all, and they don't share their numbers back with us about, you know, how much of our product goes there and how much of our product is shipped from China to the U.S. So it's more than apples and oranges. It's probably like apples and giraffes when you're trying to compare them. But we do know that a lot of our product ends up in China in the markets, and it's a growing market. China has the fastest growing middle class in the world. That's just more money and more mouths that want to spend money on high-end products. And so it's an important market that we have a placement in. But just some quick information, and I have some stats I want to read out to you. So we polled the industry back in the fall about what the impact of the Chinese tariffs were to them. And of the members that responded back to us, 65% reported they had immediate lost sales from the increase of these tariffs. 50% reported delays in their sales. And 36% reported that they lost customers in China just due to these tariffs. And another 21% reported that they have unanticipated costs because of the trade conflict. So those are big numbers. We have been tracking year-to-date exports to China. Right now it's about 21% lower than it was a year ago, and we're not even through the whole year. So we're expecting some big drop-offs of our exports to China, which is one of our largest markets. The other half of the tariff, though, is the retaliatory tariffs that the U.S. implemented in response to these 25% tariffs. And so we have a 10% tariff right now on seafood products coming back to the U.S. So these are our products that are sent to China being reprocessed, and then some products coming back. We were able to get some relief on some salmon, cod, and pollock products, But there are still some species that are still caught in the mix, like flatfish species, that if that were to go up to 25%, that would be a really large hit because they are competing against other species. When a customer goes to a grocery store and looks at buying, seafood for dinner, and they see price, and the price is much higher, they probably will buy another product. Or if they get really confused, as our research tells us, they'll just go buy chicken instead, and that's the last thing we want to have happen. So we are hopeful that the U.S. and China will reach a trade agreement, and there will be some relief in these tariffs on both sides. They are a strain on the seafood industry. I was talking about holdover of inventory. I think you can say that some of the inventory that the seafood industry currently has that they're sitting on is directly because of the Chinese tariffs and then not being able to either find customers, new customers, or sell. I think everybody would love to be able to pivot and find new markets rather quickly, but this Chinese market is something that's the Alaska seafood industry and ASME has been actively engaging for over two decades. We've put a lot of effort into growing the Chinese market and into developing the processing centers in China. It's not something that you can just simply overnight say, okay, we're going to process our fish here, or we're going to sell our fish there. Those relationships and those markets do take time to develop. And so if we get China back, that's great. If not, we can expect it will take time to develop new markets.
Representative Tara.
Oh, thank you. I just want to understand, okay, so the way this has worked before is prior to July 6th, what was implemented in July 6th, everything we sent over got an additional 25% added to it. But then starting in September, anything they sent back got 10% added to it. But now in March, it'll be another 25%. So it'd be like 35% over that.
Yeah, through the chair, okay. Representative Tarr, that's a good question. So the 25% tariff is only for the product staying in China.
Okay.
The coming back, though, was 10%. On top of the existing tariff. And actually, I should say that 25% is on top of existing tariffs. And I didn't include that chart, but there was anywhere from like 10% to 15% on depending on the product. So it wasn't a flat across the board for every product. But so that's 25% on top of the existing one. So it's as high as like 40% for some products going into the Chinese markets. Now, coming back, that is 10%. That March 1st deadline, thank you for bringing that up, is that actually has been extended. That's not going to go into effect on March 1st, that 25%. They keep pushing that back because I believe and they believe that they're going to reach a trade agreement with China.
Representative Vance.
I have a question about, do we have a comparison of Russia tariffs with agreements with China? Is there concern that Russia will try to come in and sweep up that market with the tariff wars going on?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Vance, that's a great question. China has a much larger list of free trade agreements than the U.S. currently does. Russia, however, is not on that list. We don't know what their trade agreement is with China, but we do know that they ship a lot of seafood to China. They also ship a lot of their seafood to North Korea, and some of that gets processed in North Korea, then enters into the Chinese market as well as other markets we compete with Russian product in. So to say that there is an imbalance, that would be accurate.
Thank you.
I have a question, and it doesn't particularly, or maybe it does, pertain to the tariffs, but I didn't hear you mention anything about the school lunch program in relation to fish in the U.S.
To the chair, that's a great point, and thank you for bringing that up. It was just an omission in the amount of information I had to put in here. So I'll speak to it now because it is a great win for the Alaska seafood industry, especially for the pollock industry. Working with our delegation in D.C., making sure the language has changed for the school lunch programs to make sure they buy not only American-made but Alaska products for the school lunch. And so getting Alaska seafood as on the school lunch program is a much larger lift than you might think it sounds like. You have to have approved product forms and approved product types so they know what they're purchasing to be used and then the school lunches. And so that was about a $30 million just in sales for Alaska pollock alone to enter the school lunch programs across the United States. So that was a big win. And previously, kind of because the way that our systems work, they were purchasing Russian pollock as part of that school lunch program, but the new language makes sure that they're going to be purchasing Alaska pollock only.
Beautiful.
Yes. More seafood eaters.
Right on.
And that actually is my last slide, so just my contact information is at the end.
Okay. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that, it just reminded me there was also an effort in the last couple of years to get language for the WIC program amended as it related to, I think it was the WIC program. I don't think it was the regular SNAP benefits, something related to, but I'm just trying to think if that would be on the WIC list. Anyhow, are there any other federal food programs, do you know, where any other of those changes have taken place to either expand to allow purchasing of Alaska seafood or?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, that's correct. I can't remember either if it was SNAP or WIC. I can follow up with the committee on that. I'd have to work with one of my coworkers on that specifically. But yes, Alaska Seafood is available on either one or both of those programs to be purchased. And I think some of that might be canned salmon and then maybe some other value-added products like canned salmon.
If there is any additional info, I would appreciate, if you would share that through the chair's office.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share that with you. And actually, through the chair, Representative Tarr, we also work with C-Share. C-Share is it's a national program to donate seafood products to those in need, such as like food banks. The Alaska seafood industry being the majority of Alaska seafood. I mean, we represent over 60% of the wild harvest in our country alone. And so there's the industry works closely with C-Share. Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works closely with C-Share to make sure that there is product available for those in need in places like food banks.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I was going to kind of let this go, but I guess old habits die hard, and I spent the last 4 years in the Finance Committee, so I got to ask the question. When we go back to your budget for the year, the last couple years, you guys have been burning $3 million more than what you guys have been bringing in, separate from the conversation that we're going to have in the budget process this year. You got about 4 more years if that were to continue exactly the way that it was. What do you guys have planned? I mean, is the idea to just kind of keep going and hopefully we'll fund it, or what do you guys have planned to ensure that you're not continually running into deficit and eventually come across the same exact wall that we're here today dealing with? We didn't do our job for several years, and that's why we're sitting here today looking at the 1.6. I'd hate to see you guys there. So what do you guys see? What do you see in terms of your planning to move away from getting to that same point?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Pruitt, that's a great question. And you can look at the ASME budget almost like a microcosm of the state budget alone. We are trying to reduce our spend plan. I would say that, if we were to combine our federal funds and our industry funds, the right number is about $13.5 million a year, and we're spending, as you said, more than that. You're correct. Our board is working with staff to identify other fund sources, whether there's other grant availabilities through, federal grants outside of the MAP grants we currently receive, possibly working with industry on other fund sources as well. And so that's something that we're actively engaged in and seeking at the same time, understanding that we can't continue to spend at the same pace, because you're right, we will run out of money, and that's the last thing we want to be at. So could we come down a few more million? I think the answer is yes, but in marketing, you get what you pay for. It takes money to be in the game, and so we would have to do less if we couldn't find those other fund sources.
Follow up, Representative Pruitt.
And I appreciate that, and I think it's vital that you guys, obviously continue the work of trying to find if there's other opportunities to fill that void. We all know marketing has its effect, and if you're not funding it, there's an impact. But I guess at what point do you guys start to step it back, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, I'd hate for you to kind of go like this and all of a sudden have to have the same, oh, we've got to cut $3 million immediately. I would expect that to prevent that, it may be a kind of forward thought in terms of let's step this down might be an opportunity to start looking at now, because you just don't know what the budget's going to be. We don't know what our budget's going to be. So at what time do you start stepping that down to prevent hitting that wall?
Yeah, and through the chair, Representative Pruitt, the projection only went out to FY20, but we have our own internal documents that do show us drawing that number down lower as we get into the next several fiscal years. And so if we don't create new fund sources within the next one or two fiscal years, you'll see that number, that $16 million spend plan, go down by a couple million for sure.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
So thank you. So following on that line of questioning, you know, it's easy during the budgeting process to look at the budget just through the one-dimensional aspect of numbers, you know, a math problem, if you will. But there's also, particularly with this industry, which has tremendous growth opportunities, you know, equivalent to the tourism industry, I would say. But maybe give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about what's the cost of having your overall budget going down and your inability to perhaps on slide 7, where you talk about how Alaska seafood has overtaken Angus beef in 2016. But I guess I'd venture a guess to again give you the cue that could be possibly impacted by ASME's inability to you know, do its job.
Through the chair, Representative Adjman, that's a great point that you make. I wasn't quite prepared to speak on that, but I can speak on it a little bit off cuff. So ASME's spend plan was over $20 million. I think it was as high as $22 million and even higher than that several fiscal years ago, maybe out to like FY 12 to 13. We were receiving obviously a lot more general fund at that time. When we had to start ramping down our expenses due to reduced general fund, one of the things that the board and the staff decided at the time was to cut our advertising program for the domestic market. That was a $2 million spend plan that we spent in the U.S. markets. That reduced our impressions and our visibility greatly. I think, you know, ASME is, in Alaska seafood is in a very strong place in the market right now, and we can probably sustain that strength in a short term. However, over long term, you will see some impacts as other competitors increase their funding. A slide that, you know, I was trying to be cognizant of time, so I didn't include every slide that I have, but a slide I'll share to different groups across the state often is how much Norway spends on their marketing efforts compared to Alaska Seafood. We have about a $16 million spend plan, and they have about a $50 million spend plan. So to put that in comparison, that's some big competition. They're spending about three times as much as we are, and you know that's just three times more visibility they're going to have in the marketplace. And you know, like I said earlier, you get what you pay for, and you know, being visible for the consumer sells seafood.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You had mentioned that right now you're at the half of 1%, but that statutorily you have the ability to go to 6/10. And so I'm just wondering, is that a decision that's just made through the board of ASME to change that, or does that have to go through some kind of stakeholder process, or how would that work? And it sounded like that was under consideration, and I just wondered if you wanted to comment because of the other budget talks.
Yeah, sure. Through the chair, Representative Tarr, that's a good question. So the way it's written out in statute is the vote, should the industry decide to increase their contribution to ASME, that goes actually to the stakeholders who control 51% of the value of the industry. So it's a processor tax. It's not paid for by the harvesters themselves. It's paid for by the processors. So it's the processors that control 51%. Yeah, you can make that vote and then that change.
Are there other questions for Mr. Woodrow? Thank you. We certainly do appreciate you coming and giving us some insight onto how valuable our Alaskan seafood is, not only to Alaskans, but throughout the world. And a lot of times you forget how far it goes. So thank you. Thank you very much. And I would like to thank everybody that attended. And of course, thank you to my committee. There's no meeting this Thursday for fisheries. We will meet again Tuesday, March 5th at 10 a.m. And seeing no further business to come before this committee, we will adjourn at 11:03.